What changed for me is the morning of we had there was an explosive argument, which was kind of the end straw, where he threatened to burn the house down with me and the children in it, going as far as getting a gas can and a lighter. And I had to take my babies and run for our lives. And I knew something was, it was an off day. And I called my sister and kind of confided a little bit into her. And she was like, "Amanda, what can I do? What do you need right now? How can I help you?" And I think that is such powerful questions to someone going through it or someone just left. The most dangerous point in a domestic violence victim's like existence is right when they leave.
Hey everybody, welcome to Sound Bombing. I created this show for people who want to experience a radical, life-changing journey through the sounds of my diverse guests. I hope that each sound you hear on this show will strengthen your faith, encourage your dreams, and challenge you to awaken the greatness within you.
This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new values, and a new experience.
Ladies and gentlemen, the star of the show.
Whatever the time of the day it is, you're at the right place at the right time with the right host. Welcome to my show. I am Dr. Lamar Darnell Shields, the creator of Sound Bombing. And bombing is a healing. It's healing, not bomb. We're blowing something up. Well, we may be blowing up some ideas. And my goal with this show is to introduce you to people with ideas that will help you unlock your full potential. Now, according to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men have experienced physical violence by an intimate partner. This extraordinary common form of abuse silences victims and paralyzes them with terror. It is a pattern that my next guest is very familiar with. Like so many women in the U.S. and abroad, you know, this fairy tale of romance turned into something different. Her story draws on her own experience of survival and perseverance. She's been sharing her experiences across the globe, finding the courage to break free. And what my listeners might draw some parallels from her journey. She is the author of One of the Lucky Ones, which describes her descent into an eventual escape from abusive marriage. She is also the author of Always and a collection of poems. I would like to welcome Amanda E. Lee to the Sound Bombing Studios. Amanda, how are you doing? And let my listeners know where you're calling in from.
I am right outside of DC. I'm in Virginia suburbs.
So welcome, welcome. So you are on the East Coast
I'm on the East Coast.
Hey, Amanda, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to talk with you. We got a chance to view your site. We got a chance to get a couple of excerpts from your book, and we're dealing with a serious, serious, serious issue. And to get this interview started, I want to recite, I wouldn't say sing, a lyric from a song called Love the Way You Lie by Eminem and Rihanna. It says, just gonna stand there and watch me burn. Well, that's all right, because I like the way it hurts. Just gonna stand there and hear my cry. Well, that's all right, because I love the way you lie. I love the way you lie. And I'm starting out with that excerpt because I've used this video, Amanda, in discussing domestic violence amongst young people from elementary schools to high schools to colleges, and had this conversation about the things that are taking place, not only just at schools, but also at homes. And I use this these two icons, of course, Eminem and also Rihanna. You know, Rihanna was caught up in the domestic violence situation with your homeboy, you know, from Virginia, Chris Brown. How ironic. And so I wanted to start out with that. But before we go into a little deeper, I also want to read an excerpt that came from your story. He says, She is sure that the loud, explosive fights are just evidence of the passion in their relationship. They always make up, of course, and he always apologizes and swears that he loves her. And I wanted to put those lyrics side by side with your memoir, and it reminded me of the video. First of all, are you familiar with the song?
I was just going to say, I am picturing the video as you were saying it with the house burning behind her.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. And so one of the questions that young people ask me after I show that video and we discuss it, then they end up in bed together. They make up, they drink, there's some level of intimacy. Talk to me about your experience as I'm reading that to you and as I'm reading an excerpt from your own story.
Yeah, I mean, my own story, I think when it's happening to you, at least for myself, it was hard to believe that this was actually happening. I mean, I talk about it in the book, I love me some Lifetime. I love that used to be, you know, the after school specials that we used to watch when we get home. There's one with Candace Cameron Bure and Fred Savage about domestic violence. Like, I was informed. I was an independent, strong woman. And I think when you fall in love with someone, you try to see the best in them. And what I've learned from my own experience, as well as other women, is that when you are going through it and they're apologizing, you start to get in this cycle, but you don't realize you're in this cycle of abuse until you're well into it. Because you have a fight and you're like, okay, all right, well, that must have been a fluke. That's not going to happen again. And it's almost in disbelief too. Like, this isn't happening. And I think also, you know, you talked about speaking to young people about this and showing that video. And I love that comparison you just made. We're not taught what healthy relationships truly are. Like, I know when I grew up, my parents fought and I thought that was normal. So any relationship that I was in as an adult, there was always fighting because I thought, well, that's normal. You're supposed to fight and you're supposed to make up. I don't know that anyone took the time to be like, this is what a healthy partnership, because that's what it is when you're in a relationship. A healthy partnership is supposed to look and feel like, and this is what it doesn't look and feel like.
So you said you saw your family, saw relationships fight. Did you see physical? Was it physical abuse or was it just all verbal? And not saying that verbal is not as bad as physical and vice versa.
Oh yeah, no, it all sucks. Yeah. No, in my family, there was no verbal or physical abuse. It was just fighting. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that growing up, I ever knew any different. I didn't know any different that, you know, fighting all the time is not actually a sign of a healthy relationship. And when I was with my ex-husband, we fought and we fought and we fought, and it didn't get to the point of abuse until we were engaged. And at that point, I felt like I was trapped. I felt like I couldn't get away.
Mm. So when I juxtapose these two lyrics and your story and then these lyrics, I heard you say there was something you said about your husband, your ex, was that it was almost like you felt for him, but you felt for him more than you felt for yourself. So unpack that for me. So you're the one that's being abused.
Right.
But in your mind, you're feeling sorry for the person who then is abusing you. Is that common? And then if that's so, how did you then get out of that mindset? What did you do?
Yeah, I mean, it's very common. It's 100% gaslighting. You know, you love this person and then they are abusive to you. And then the cycle of abuse, they come back and they are very apologetic, will do anything and everything that you want. It's probably one of the highs of your relationship because they're concerned about losing you. So then you start to feel empathetic towards that person. And it wasn't until I have two small children. I have an 8 and 6-year-old. It wasn't until I started to see some of the characteristics of abuse being taken out on them that I was like, wait a minute. And honestly, like, the Me Too movement at that time was just getting started. And all of a sudden these terms like gaslighting were becoming more commonplace. And I was like, I think that's what's happening here. Like, I mean, I knew what the physical violence was, but the psychological, the verbal. I was like, this is what's happening. This is what's happening to me. And then it became, how can I safely escape? How can I safely escape with my children?
You know, it's interesting. I am new to the I know I'm very familiar with the Me Too movement, but the gaslighting piece was new to me. And how ironic. I don't believe that there's anything as a coincidence. Last night, I watched a movie shot in DC, actually.
Oh.
And it was called Gaslight. And it was
about, oh yeah, I've heard of it.
It was about a couple getting caught up in this love triangle, but there was some abuse. But prior to that, I watched a movie called The Perfect Guy, which was with what is the actress's name? Sanaa Lathan was one of the main actresses, main actor in it. You know, two other gentlemen whose names Morris Chestnut was in it. And this guy, he was this perfect guy. That she left her husband, a boyfriend, for this quote unquote perfect guy. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, charmed her. He's intelligent. He didn't have children, was not married before, you know, met the parents. And then what happened was he snapped at a gas station and he physically assaulted this individual. And I remember her going to her friends, because again, I'm sure you have stories about your friends. And the friends downplayed it. They were like, oh, you know, it's the first time it happened. You know, I don't think he'll do this to you. And then as the story goes on, he eventually, you know, kills people and take people out. And so it was interesting. But she walked away immediately because she says, I don't want to be involved in that. Now, someone like you, you know, didn't walk away immediately. Talk about that process, because what happens is you always hear people say, well, why did you stay? And I am in the trauma-informed care business. You know, as an educator, as a researcher, you know, worked at Hopkins, worked for the Center for Violence Prevention. So I'm very privy on the questions that you ask people and how do you ask people. But I know that most people, being your male or female friends, will say to you, Amanda, why didn't you just leave? Can you unpack and answer that?
Yeah. And I've gotten that a lot, especially since writing the book. Why didn't you leave? Why didn't you tell us this was happening? And, you know, I think several reasons. One is I felt trapped. The psychological abuse started first. And I truly believed that I could not survive without him.
So walk me through psychological abuse. What does that actually mean?
So what that means is putting me down constantly, but not like, you know, if you're first dating someone and they're like, you really suck with this, you know, you're going to be like, you know, screw you, I'm leaving. It was little things constantly. Like, I was convinced by the end that I was an awful driver. I can't manage money. I can't survive without him. He has a very well-paying job and I am a teacher. And yet I didn't even realize when it was happening. I was the one who was paying for everything and he wasn't. So for me, it was, I did not believe that I could survive with two children in the DC suburbs financially by myself. And it also, there's shame. I was ashamed that I had allowed this to happen to me. I'm from Philly. I am a strong, independent, smart, don't take crap from anybody type of person.
You're from the cheese steak, Italian running city.
Yeah, no. And if this was happening to one of my friends, I would be down there keying the guy's car. Like, I would.
It was interesting. I hear you say that, and I hear people say that, and that, because as you're talking, somebody is thinking, man, I do that. I put my partner down. Yeah. I say those things in a jokingly manner. And so somebody's listening, like, I need to stop doing that. But I'm loving that you're saying that I would have definitely told somebody,
yeah,
girl, you need to leave right now.
And it's also, you know, when you speak it out loud, it becomes true. And then you have to deal with it. And I knew the minute I said anything to my family, to my friends, they would have come down in hordes and packed me up and left. And it's like, for whatever reason at that moment, and I can't explain it, I couldn't do that.
So I want to go back to the, question, because I'm really big on question. When you talk about trauma-informed care, not asking the person what's wrong with you, asking them what's happened with you. So I asked the question, why did you stay? As a survivor, how could we turn that question around? What did you need to hear? What question did you need to hear? Instead of just saying, girl, why did you stay? Why don't you leave? What question was asked of maybe yourself or maybe a friend? Or how should we turn that question around? Because again, if I come to you and say, Amanda, girl, why didn't you just leave? I would expect an attack from you. I wouldn't expect the reasoning that you gave me. I would expect an attack, because I would sort of say the same thing. Is there a different question that we should be asking survivors? Or is there a question that you ask yourself or someone asked you that you knew that it was time to go?
I think the big question to ask anyone, either in it or just leaving, is what can I do to help you? How can I help you? What do you need right now? And what changed for me is the morning of there was an explosive argument, which was kind of the end straw, where he threatened to burn the house down with me and the children in it, going as far as getting a gas can and a lighter. And I had to take my babies and run for our lives. And I knew something was, it was an off day. And I called my sister and kind of confided a little bit into her. And she was like, Amanda, what can I do? What do you need right now? How can I help you? And I think that is such powerful questions to someone going through it, or someone just left. The most dangerous point in a domestic violence victim's like existence is right when they leave, right when their abuser realizes that they do not have any power over them anymore. They can't control them. So, you know, and it ranges from what I needed was someone to listen to me, someone to come pick me up off my kitchen floor and hug me, someone to make my children dino nuggets because I just couldn't mentally comprehend how to program the oven at that moment. So I think our questions need to be, what do you need? How can I help you?
And I'm so glad you said that. I went through a situation with my daughter, and one of my good friends asked me that question, what do you need right now for you? Even though you're going to deal with this situation, what do you need? But again, this is a person who has a very strong level of self-awareness, social emotional learner. She's a coach. So quite often I don't really expect people to ask those questions. So I think by you sharing that is important. I want to go back to something that you talked about your husband being your husband having a job where he is very well off, and you having a teacher job. I know poverty is trapping women in abusive relationships. Mm-hmm. So when I think about the shadow, the pandemic arising of domestic violence, during COVID lockdown, it left many women even more exposed to abusive partners. And I say it's about economics. So as the door closes on women's employment, the door also closes on leaving an abusive relationship. What message do you have for women who stay because they feel that financially, I can't take care of myself? And your husband, your ex-husband rather, put that in your mind that you can't make it without me.
Yeah. I mean, so my door was forced open. Like there was no turning back from that moment. I was on the phone with the police running for my life. Like I knew the greatest thing I did financially was that moment, because part of the abuse was I was paying for everything. I didn't realize that I am actually in a better financial position now as from being divorced from him, because we have child support now and he has to pay for child support. And I know that in certain abuse situations, the psychological abuse is so great that the woman or man doesn't work well, they'll have to pay alimony. That my advice to anyone who is staying because of the financial thing is leave. You actually will be better off. And most counties across the United States, across the globe, have resources for this particular thing. I didn't realize it. When I went to get a protective order, restraining order, I was bombarded with all of these different pamphlets and everything saying, here is where you can go to get this. Here is where you can go to get this. It's free. All you have to do is fill out this form. So there are supports out there. It's just, we don't think to do it because we're believing what our abuser is saying.
Well, I honor the fact that you as a woman and as a mother, as a former, you know, wife, as a survivor, you decide to raise your voice. And I know that silence is a key enabler for men perpetrating violence against women and vice versa. Mm-hmm. But if women's voices aren't heard, nothing changes and violence goes on. I think about this advocate named Nicole Lee. She's a disability and family violence advocate who's been vocal in arguing that legislation, simply criminalizing coercive control, may not be the answer for that. It needs to be more people speaking out. Some people just brush it off or they ignore it. What made you want to then speak out and speak about it? Because what I know, putting my research hat on, the more you talk about it, it's almost this re-traumatization because you have to share this story over and over again. What made you want to speak out and be an advocate?
When I was going through everything, I just so desperately wanted to know I was going to be okay. And I was trying to get every piece of literature, everything that I could find to get some reassurance of somebody like me has gone through this and now they're okay. And the closest thing I found, and I love her, was Tina Turner's memoir, who is fabulous, but I am not a multimillion dollar singing recording artist. I mean, I think I am in the shower, but
yeah, I'm a beast in the shower. I got a recording contract in the shower.
Oh yeah, me too. Madonna's on the phone next. So to me, I was just like, there needs to be something else out there. And I couldn't find anything that I could relate to. And as I was going through everything, my therapist kept telling me, and my psychic, because I contacted a psychic, because again, I just wanted to know I was going to be okay, told me, you need to write. And I am not a journal person. I'm just not. And I started, and then someone was like, you should write a book. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I have time for that. And I couldn't sleep last night, as I often couldn't, or not last night, but I couldn't sleep one night. And I started thinking about what the chapters would be called. And it just kind of was like word vomit. It just poured out of me. And at first I was just going to keep it to myself and be like, this is cute. I just did this. But then I was like, you know what? There are so many people that have gone through this that are just like me, are in the exact same position, desperately trying to find something to relate to. So that's when I made the decision to publish.
So the book is called One of the Lucky Ones, which describes your situation and your eventual escape. Let's talk about the book. Let's talk about the title. Why did you choose the title? And then maybe you want to share an excerpt from the book or just talk about the writing process as well.
Sure. So I picked the title because I do think I'm one of the lucky ones. I got out. I'm no longer in an abusive relationship and I survived. I got my children out safely. We're thriving. So I do feel incredibly blessed. And while that night that I had to run for my life will unfortunately be etched in my memory and my children's memory, it's a blessing that that happened because that forced my door open. There was no other choice. And I feel free. I feel like I am one of the lucky ones.
Wow. So what are some of the lessons that you learned from writing this book? Talk about process, talk about beginning to end, talk about the emotions that you were feeling as you were putting your thoughts and your ideas and your feelings on this paper and or computer.
Yeah, it was hard. I mean, it was easy to write and then going back to reread it, edit it. It was hard. It was like re-traumatization all over again. But it was also very freeing. It's like I would write a chapter and I would just kind of let it go into the universe and then write another one and just let it go. And it was so therapeutic for me. It really was. So while the editing process was hard, the writing process was therapy. And You know, in terms of the writing process, as someone who had never written a book before in my life, I had no idea it was this hard. I mean, I knew writing a book was hard because otherwise everyone would do it. But my book was edited maybe 50 times, and it's hard, especially when you get professionals involved and you get the copy back and they have destroyed it. I felt like I was in eighth grade turning in an English paper with the red marks all over it. I was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. And it's long. I mean, I wrote this book 2 years ago and it's just being published now. So
why do you think that some victims return to or stay with their abusers? Because you got the hell out. Why do some people return?
It's hard. Escaping is hard. It's hard not to believe the person that you are living with, the things that they're saying. Once they have the control over you, it's hard to escape that control. And then once you get the police involved or go through the legal system, that's even harder. I remember looking at the district attorney when we went up for criminal charges, because I called the police that night and he was arrested. And he told me that because I had never called the police before, that he was going to get a slap on the wrist. And I remember yelling at him in like the little conference room going, this is why domestic violence victims don't come forward. This is not okay. He should get more than just don't do it again. So, you know, it's you believe the abuse, you believe it.
Yeah. You know, it is unfortunate that people don't believe it. Just listening to you describe the fact that this, your ex said that I'm going to kill you, mm-hmm. burn the entire family down, burn the entire house down. No one would know. And I'll walk away. Was just chilling to even listen because, you know, I am human. And, you know, there's this level of empathy, and I'm thinking about not only just victims who kept it to themselves, who died slowly. I think about victims who didn't get the support and help because no one believed them. But then I also think about survivors like you who, you know, I think of Harriet Tubman, who's, you know, Harriet Tubman's right next door where you're in Virginia, who said, I'm going to get out, but I'm also going to pull other women and men for that degree, and families out, because again, this affects the entire family. Speaking of affecting, let's talk about resources. I know you said you went to a place and there were resources. What are some of the resources that you've used for yourself as well as for your children? Let's talk about the children. How are the children doing? And how are you doing now that you're on the other side of this?
Yeah, we're doing great now. They are upstairs right now, bribed to get Robux if they don't interrupt us.
I know about that.
So they are silent. No, they're doing great. But the very first thing I did was I found them a therapist. I found them a woman who specializes in trauma, specifically with childhood trauma. And that was the best decision I ever made. So they saw her up until this happened right before COVID. So they saw her up until COVID. And now she's my therapist. And, you know, that has really been the best thing I ever did was therapy. Well, I went the unconventional route too. One of my dear friends now is a psychic, and, you know, say what you will, but she offered me that comfort I needed right in the beginning, telling me that I was going to be okay. And that is exactly what I needed.
Yeah. I have tons of friends who've been on this show, my friends who are mediums, who also have that gift. In the church, they call it a gift of discernment. Some people call them psychic. Some people call them medium. And you want to get as much support as you possibly could get. And the fact that you just said, she said that I was going to be okay. And quite often, that's what you want to hear. You want to hear that this too shall pass, that this is going to make you stronger. I know you also have another book coming out. That book, I think, is called Always Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a children's story about a mom reassuring her son after, you know, a fight or something happening with their father. And again, that stems from, I couldn't find anything for my kids. My kids, you know, they asked for fire extinguishers in their rooms to keep them safe. And I had them visit one of my dear friends, her husband's a firefighter. We went to visit the fire station and he showed them, like, when mommy calls 911, here's how we hear this, to try and comfort them. And I just, it stems from like things I used to say to them to try and get them to sleep.
So where's the relationship now with the ex and with the ex and the children?
So we share custody. He has them every other weekend, and we no longer have a protective order. The protective order was up in September, and we're actually pretty good co-parents, which no one can believe after everything that happened. Like, how are you two co-parenting effectively? But we are, at least for the time being. And he has gotten a lot of help. The help that he has gotten, anger management, psychologist, psychiatrist, all the things, parenting coaching, has really improved his relationship with the kids. So it was a slow process to work there, but after 3.5 years, we're there.
I love that. So how can my listeners get in contact with you?
So they can go to my website, authoraelee.com. There is a contact form and it gets sent to my email. It goes right to me. No, not anyone else. And there's also an email address there as well.
Well, Amanda E. Lee, it has been a pleasure talking with you, listening to you share your story. I wish you much success with everything that you're doing. I think that your journey and your story is so powerful. It takes so much to stand up and raise your voice. So I thank you for that. But you cannot leave. You can't get off the hook now.
Okay.
The second part of the show is called the Super Bomb Questions.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I'm ready.
You have to answer these questions as quickly as possible. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. What's your favorite word?
My favorite word, joy.
What's your favorite quote? Maybe a Bible verse or a lyric to a song?
All you need is love.
What's your superpower?
The ability to read people.
What's your spirit animal?
An anteater.
What moves you to tears of joy?
My children.
What moves you to tears of sorrow?
Reliving what my children have gone through.
What do you wish you had more time to do?
Sleep.
What advice are you glad that you ignored?
Don't move to Virginia.
If you were in the Mrs. America talent competition, what would your talent be?
It'd be that water glass thing that makes sounds that Sandra Bullock did in Miss Congeniality, because I'm not talented like that.
What's your favorite sound?
Children laughing.
Well, I thank you for hanging out with me today. It's been a pleasure. And your story is amazing. And I wish you nothing but success.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. This has been fun.
And I want to thank my engineers and Supremacy for our theme music, but all of you for listening. If you like this show, subscribe. Stop moving around. We're on every platform. Leave a comment. Stop being stingy. Share me with everybody. If you want to know more about me, go to drlds.com. And as always, believe that something wonderful is about to happen, but some people miss the message because they're too busy looking for the mess. If anyone needs help, please contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline. If you're in the U.S., that's 1-800-799-7233. 1-800-799-7233. We're going to close this show with an excerpt from Amanda Lee's book, One of the Lucky Ones.
So this is the start of chapter 2, and the chapter 2's title is Red Flags Are Meant to Be Ignored, right? I start with the quote, "The same red flags you ignore in the beginning will be the same reason it all ends." I remember meeting Don's friends at the beginning of our relationship. All of the women would make comments to me about his anger. "He's great, but he definitely has an anger problem. Have you seen his temper yet?" There was this one time I thought we were going to have to call the police. He was so mad at his brother. Looking back, I wish I could shake myself. Why did I think hearing this was normal? I laughed it off. They must be mistaken. He doesn't have an anger problem. I'm a smart woman. I would have seen evidence of an anger problem if there was one. I did get up the guts to ask him about it one day. Why were all his friends and his parents at times talking about his temper? He said, yeah, I used to have a real anger problem, but I've learned to control my temper. That's great. Did you go to anger management or do therapy? I asked, thinking what a forward-thinking boyfriend I had for recognizing he had a problem and getting help on his own. No, I just learned how to control it, he said.